Welcome back to the Love Baby and Toddler podcast. On today's episode, we are going to hear from Meg all about her birth story with Emmy. So Meg is going to share from start to finish, from pregnancy to delivery, what that looked like for her. I am so excited for her to share it today. I've obviously heard this story and pieces of it over the last couple of years when she was in labor, all of that. But I'm really excited to just sit down and talk through it and hear the whole story. So we are going to share lots of birth stories on this podcast. We'll share some of mine. We're obviously sharing Meg's today. And we're so excited to have other women and partners on in the future as well to hear their births. So before we jump into the birth story, Meg, why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey to getting pregnant and what that looked like?
Hi, yes, absolutely. So my pregnancy journey was I'm very grateful that it was a pretty quick and a pretty easy journey trying to conceive. My husband and I got married July 2017, and then the following June or the following May, we tried 1 month and it didn't work. And then the following month I got pregnant and I tracked ovulation using ovulation tests and a few apps, and it worked for us. And I'm eternally grateful because I know all of the struggles that so many people, including you, Molly, have been through. And we also have talked about, right? Like, we're going to get into my birth story, which was not as easy and magical as getting pregnant. And I think it goes to show that every single person's entire journey is different. So like, someone who's struggling trying to conceive might have an easier birth, whereas I had a very quick and easy time, thankfully, getting pregnant, and my birth was not as enjoyable. So that being said, I found out I was pregnant, what, 2 or 3 days before I was planning to come and visit you, Molly, in Chicago, which was really, really special. I took care of Nick's for a week or so. And then on my flight home, I'm not too religious. If I see something, I'm like, oh, maybe that's a sign. And I remember on my flight home, I sat next to a woman and we started talking, and she was a fertility doctor. So we were just talking casually. And then I looked out the window and I saw a full rainbow right before we took off. And I kind of took that as a sign that, like, I thought that everything was going to be okay in this pregnancy, and it ended up being great.
Yeah, I remember you guys were trying to conceive and we had been texting throughout that whole journey, and I knew it was around 2 weeks from when you had told me you ovulated, and I was like, I wonder if she's pregnant because she hasn't given me an update. So then we were in IKEA shortly after you landed and got here, and I asked you if you were pregnant, and you confirmed there in IKEA, and I kind of ruined it because you were waiting till we got home. But it was really special to have you here.
It's also terrifying too, right? Like, when you're first pregnant, I think I was like 5 or 6 weeks, baby is the size of like a poppy seed or a sesame seed. And then it's almost seems like kind of scary and also just like not real to say it out loud yet, because you don't feel it in your body yet, right? I mean, some people feel like, I think I had a few super early symptoms, but I didn't feel much different. I just felt like I didn't want to jinx it, or like just putting it out in the atmosphere, obviously, as like manifestation is one thing, but also being scared of jinxing something is another thing. So it was a moment for me to say it out loud and be like, whoa, this is real.
Yes, it is crazy when you can finally be like, okay, this is real. You see the lines getting darker on the test, and it feels like, okay, we're going to have a baby, even though it still feels so far away. But it is also really exciting at the very beginning there. So let's start at the beginning. When did you have your very first doctor's appointment?
So I called the doctor while I was at your house still. And then I think she saw me a week or two after, which felt like the longest waiting period of my entire life. Like, felt even longer than when you try to get pregnant and then you have to do your 2 week wait. It was like a second 2 week wait. In that time, I'm like so excited and then nervous, and then you don't know what's going on. And then I got there and we went to the doctor. My husband, Dean, came with me and we went together and we saw a little heartbeat. And in that moment, I felt like a little more calm.
There really is nothing quite like seeing the heartbeat for the very first time in your very first pregnancy. So what was the rest of pregnancy like for you?
My pregnancy was, I'd say, textbook. Like, I had, I mean, obviously everybody's bodies are different. Everything that's in all of like the apps that you download and the books that you have, I was like trying to just take in all of the information and see like week by week if I was like experiencing this symptom that I read in this book. But I had extreme, I did not throw up, but I was like, I had morning sickness, which I'm calling afternoon sickness, because it would hit me at like noon and I would have to sit like frozen, couldn't move, under an air conditioner for like hours each afternoon for like a couple of weeks. It was like the dead of summer. And I was working at a summer camp for preschoolers during the day. And I will never forget, like around lunchtime every single day, I just got hit with this wave of nausea. And I would like eat a tiny granola bar to make it through the day and then just like get home. And I was sitting under the air conditioner like it was just, it was my new home. And then every time Dean would open the fridge to try to cook something, I could smell the smells that came out of the fridge from the opposite end of the apartment, which I will never forget those smells. But other than that, the pregnancy progressed beautifully. I had a great pregnancy. I think I was able to eat. I think after like 13 or 14 weeks, everything was super smooth. And then exactly like everybody says, it's like the second trimester is like the best. What do people call it? Like the vacation time or something?
Yes, the amazing honeymoon period in the second trimester.
Because it's like you finally have a belly, right? So you look pregnant, you're like kind of like feeling yourself a little bit, you have your cute little bump. And then, so I was teaching preschool for, I was teaching five-year-olds at the time, and we were able to like loop pregnancy and babies into the curriculum. And we had a huge dramatic play center with like little baby stations and diapers. And my students were like so, so into it. And it was really special, that aspect of it, to be able to kind of share that like with the kids and in my job, which was like, you know, one of, it was a super, super unique experience. And then, I mean, everything was great. The anatomy scan was perfectly fine, which like, talking about this, it all sounds so magical and so perfect, but like deep down, I think you don't realize this until you yourself are pregnant. Like you do not realize how much anxiety comes with growing a human being inside of your body. So physically, everything was fantastic, but I just developed anxiety. I think it was like a little after the anatomy scan, which I knew everything was fine, but then it's like, you know, mentally, you know that everything's going to change and things are going to shift. And like, I live in New York City and it was like the dead of winter. So it was like a little bit scary when I was like getting a little bit bigger to go out and walk in the snow and the ice. And it's just these heightened things. And then like kind of knowing things are going to change, but excited at the same time.
I want to just ask you this question because you were a first time mom going into your first anatomy scan. And for those who are listening and don't know what an anatomy scan, it's the 20-week ultrasound where they look really in depth at everything on the baby, the fingers, the toes, their kidneys, their heart. They're really looking at a lot of things on the baby, and some things that maybe would be diagnosed later can be seen in the anatomy scan. So Meg, as a first-time mom, what were you feeling like going into that appointment? Did you know kind of what that appointment was about and what was going to happen in there?
Yes, I'm so happy you said that, because going into it, I feel like, you know, I had a little bit of anxiety, but it was more of like excitement, right? So like you go in and you're able to see so much more because the baby is bigger and you can see like fingers and toes and organs, and it's so exciting. And I think, you know, when we plan to have a baby, our second baby next time around, I think that at that point, I think there will be more anxiety around the anatomy scan than I had initially with my pregnancy with Emmy, because I was like naive in almost because my anatomy scan was like Emmy was great and was developing fine. I think that naivety was helpful in a way because I didn't worry much about it. Whereas like, I think a second time around, I think I might have a little more anxiety leading up to it.
Oh, absolutely. Because the second time around or third time around, you know more and you don't have that kind of ignorance as bliss as you go into it. So, okay, good. You had your anatomy scan. So how did the rest of pregnancy go for you?
It was, I think, as easy as it possibly could have been. Like I had a great amount of energy. Emmy was growing nicely. I think she was in like pretty standard percentiles for what they thought would be her weight, which is always so funny that they can give you like kind of a range of what they think the weight will be while she's in there. So the entire rest of the pregnancy was awesome. I was due February 24th. So I would have been like 40 weeks then. And I guess they were like, you know, first time moms, like the babies don't always come early. They don't always come on time. So let's set an induction date. So we set an induction date for March 2nd. And I worked until February 28th. So I was going to work teaching preschoolers when I was like 40 plus five. So 40 weeks and 5 days. I do need to note one very important thing. So my husband at the time, bless his heart, he knew, well, you know, I got pregnant and then I talked to my job about maternity leave. And then he brings up paternity leave or whatever with his company. And they were like, oh yeah, you get, oh my God, I want to say it was even, I think it was like 12 or 16 weeks fully paid, mind you. So it was like 16 weeks paternity leave, fully paid, right? So I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like we'll be able to be home with the baby together. Great plan. He worked for a startup at the time, which no longer exists. But a week before Emmy was born, his boss reached out to him and was kind of like, listen, like, I'm not going to tell you to take paternity leave early, but just the way that things are like unfolding, I want to advise you to take it kind of soon. So he ended up starting his paternity leave before I even had the baby. So if you can imagine me waddling to work at 40 weeks and 5 days pregnant, and he was not working and was able to like just relax at home. I mean, he's extremely helpful and got like the nursery ready and a lot of stuff ready, but it was like those days of me being like, oh my God, I'm housing this massive human in my belly and going to work while he already started his leave. It was,
I'm just picturing you 40 weeks and 5 days and Dean home relaxing.
Out of control. Yeah. But I'm grateful that it worked out. Everything was okay. And I remember it was a Thursday, and the couple of weeks leading up to it, we were telling my students, like, the one thing about babies and pregnancy is that it is unpredictable. So we talked about this word over and over again, and we let them know that, like, we don't know sometimes when babies are going to come, and we don't know when Miss Megan's baby is going to come. So we would talk about that every day. And I remember it was a Thursday and it was like 2 p.m. And I was like, all right, this is it, guys. Like, this is my last day. I don't think I'm going to make it in tomorrow. And I think I left that day of work. I got a pedicure. And then the next day, Dean and I went to the gym because, Molly, you gave me a tip. You were like, yeah, I went to the gym before I went to labor, before your birth with Nyx. Am I right about that?
Yep, that's correct. And my water broke that night.
Yep. So I was like, ooh, I'll be just like Molly. Let's go to the gym. I'm looking like a fool. I was like, should I even try to get on the Stairmaster? I think I ended up on the treadmill. But we went to the gym and then we went to our favorite restaurant for dinner Friday night, which sounds like super fancy and exciting, but it was like a local burger spot, which is just delicious. And then we went to, I think it was like Home Goods or Marshall's or something, to do like one quick scan of the store if we needed anything else. And I took a picture of us that I'll never forget in a mirror. And it is me with just like this basketball and Dean. And then we got home and I was like, all right, this is our last night together. We watched a movie, and then the induction was set for the following Saturday at, I think it was supposed to be in there at like 3 or 4 p.m., which I feel like typically our induction's usually like super early in the morning from what I've heard. I was surprised.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the birthing person and what their cervix is doing and what that looks like. Like if your cervix and you have a good Bishop score, then you might go in first thing in the morning, you'll start with Pitocin and no cervical ripener. But if your cervix is kind of locked shut, it's not soft, then you might go in the night before and get Cervodil or Cytotec to start things.
Okay. No, noted for maybe next time around. So, so I have heard from a few people that, or I've heard that many moms go into labor right before they're set to be induced. I've heard this from a mom in my neighborhood. I've heard it on a podcast. It happened to me. So I'm like, maybe there is some truth to it. And I don't know if it's because like you're finally able to just like relax a little bit because you're like, okay, this baby is coming like at the induction time. So I might as well just like prepare for it now. And you just get like mentally and physically prepared. So we were set to be induced in like the afternoon on a Saturday, and it was Friday night. We had our little burger spot. We came home and watched a movie, and we're just relaxing in bed. And then Dean fell asleep. And then another sign, my favorite movie of all time, Grease, came on. And it was like midnight and I couldn't sleep. So I'm watching Grease. And all of a sudden I started feeling like definitely they were what I thought were Braxton Hicks. So I'm like, ooh, all right. Like that one, you know, felt like a little tight. And then I fell asleep. And then these, what I thought were Braxton Hicks, which I think now were like early contractions, woke me up throughout the night. And by the time like 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. rolled around, they were getting like kind of regular. I had an app and I was timing the contraction times and I get like the intensity. And then it was like 10 a.m. and I sent Dean to the gym because I was like, this might be the last time you can go to the gym for a while. And I was like, okay, I'm going to take a shower. Barely made it through my shower because the contractions were becoming more intense and more regular. And I got out of the shower and I was like, oh my God, I need to call him to come home. So I called him, cut his gym time a little bit short. And he came home and made me like a quick little lunch. And I remember at every bite, I was like just doubling over in pain. I mean,
mac and cheese, right?
It was mac and cheese. It was Annie's white cheddar. I love that you remember. I will never forget. I was like... doubled over trying to like bite it, chew it and swallow it before the next contraction came. And then every time I would be like, okay, I can take another bite. It would just like happen all over again. So at that point I was like, I think I should call the doctor. So I called the doctor who was, or the like on-call number, and they sent me to the on-call doctor. So she was like, okay, like I think you're getting very close. Like make sure they're, I don't know what she said, like 5 minutes or less apart. And if you're tracking that and that's consistent for over an hour, then come in. And I've heard so many stories of women who get to the hospital and get sent home. And I was like set on that not being me. It was like, I'm not going to be forced to go all the way home. And mind you, we're in the city. So our whole birth plan began with taking an Uber to the hospital. So I was like, I don't want to Uber to the hospital with our suitcase and whatever, and then to like get sent home. Like, what are we going to do? So I labored at home for as long as I could. And I was like, all right, I think it's time. So we called our Uber. Uber driver was very nice. He actually told us that he'd driven in his Uber career, like 3 or 4 women to the hospital who were in labor. So I was like, okay, like that makes me feel a little bit better in case my water breaks in the backseat of your car. And we had, you know, those like wee-wee pads, Molly, that you use for your diaper change on your couch. Yeah. I brought one of those to sit on, even though my water hadn't even broken yet.
Well, that was very considerate of you. So you didn't ruin his car, you know?
I'm like, I don't want to like give birth and then like be sued by Uber all within 24 hours. So let's reverse, because Molly, I forgot to add in this part, which I'm sure is a text message that you're just going to remember for the rest of your life. I remember texting Molly being like, I think my mucus plug is coming out. And we had like a quick conversation and I ended up sending you a picture of it.
I thought that was before at school.
No, this was the morning of the induction.
Oh, I do vividly remember that picture.
You're gonna have
but I thought it was the day before.
No, it was the morning of. I'll never forget. And I thankfully didn't have like any like spotting scares. I didn't have like any bleeding really all throughout pregnancy, which I was super grateful for, because that's something that like one of the things surrounding anxiety that you don't really think about is like every time I would pee during pregnancy, I would like make sure there was no blood, just I think for, you know, peace of mind, because that's something to look out for that doctors always tell you, if that's the case, then to give them a call. But I was like, you know, I'm like about to be 41 weeks pregnant. Like, I think this is like what should be happening at this point. And also like the week before leading up to it, every day, every night in the middle of the night, when you get up to pee like 7 times, every time I stood up, I would be like, okay, this is it. My water's going to break. And I would stand up to go to the bathroom and like wait like 3 seconds and then nothing would ever happen. So unlike you, Molly, who you actually had your water break, I did not have my water break, but I did have the mucus plug come out, the bloody show, which is a phrase that I don't love. And I had the contraction. So fast forward. I was in labor. I told my mom, and my parents live about 4.5 hours away. So I was like, told my mom, I was like, Mom, I think I'm in labor. And she was like, okay, Meg, like, I've known that you were going to be in labor since you said your contractions woke you up last night. She's like, but I didn't say anything. So my parents jumped in the car. My sister lived like 3 streets away, which was wonderful. So we and Dean's dad and stepmom live in New York City. So we had like, you know, family around for this moment, right? So get to the hospital, and I'm, you know, thankfully my water didn't break in the backseat of the Uber. We walk in. I remember from the hospital tour, you like walk in the front door, you get in, you push 11, you get to triage. And I could barely even get to the elevator. So got to the elevator. I'm like holding on, doubled over in pain. And we step out of the elevator, and just some magical human was right there with a wheelchair. And he wheelchaired me into, he pushed me into triage. So we checked in. I had already done like all the check-in that you had to do on the computer, but we still, of course, had to like sign a few things. So I'm like sitting in this chair, huffing and puffing, waiting to be called in. And then finally a nurse called and she checked me, and I was 4 centimeters dilated. So I was like so relieved, because I was like, I am so happy that I did not come to this hospital early just to get sent home. So we got admitted. I had my own little room, and I, you know, to go back a little bit, like, I feel like I was, you know, informed, absolutely not as informed as you were, Molly. And I regret not taking more birthing classes and learning more about birth before this all happened. I think in my mind, I was like, eh, whatever, like, I'm young, I'm going to get an epidural, I'll push the baby out, everything will be easy, everything will be fine. So I was, I think, like, pretty ill-prepared for what was to come. Like, I knew it was going to hurt, right? So I was, like, mentally preparing myself for pain. But other than that, I don't feel like I was prepared as I wish I would have been. And always think to myself, like, if I had been more prepared, would things have progressed differently? But we'll get there. So, you know, my birth plan, I have it all written out. Thanks to like a template that you definitely sent me. Like, I want to do skin to skin. I'd like to do delayed cord clamping. I would like to delay the first bath, you know, like the very basic things that.
Yeah. Nothing like crazy, just your basic, simple birth wishes that you might want.
So I think I'm like, I'll get admitted. I'll, you know, I'm already 4 centimeters. This will be great. This will be easy. So we get to the room, and I'm progressing like pretty, not like extremely quickly, but I think as, you know, I think like pretty steady, right? So like every time they came to check me, I was like a little bit more dilated, and I was in like, you know, you're giving birth, so you're in some pain, and it is like the most intense thing you're ever going to experience in your life. So people who are listening to this, if you have not had a baby yet, the pain and all of this insanity that you go through is 1,000,000% worth it. But I'm not going to lie to you. Of course it hurts. So I'm like, I need an epidural. I need an epidural. And the anesthesiologist was in the operating room with somebody else. So I had to wait for him to come in. So the nurse is like trying to position me, and has Dean like putting pressure on my hips, and it's barely helping. And I wanted to get on the bed. Like, I didn't have like a birthing ball plan and take a bath plan, or like, do I want to sit like over the little toy? Like, I don't know. I was just like going to go for it. Whatever. I was like going to listen to my body and like hope that an epidural would just save the day. So finally I'm like sitting in bed, sitting up, hugging a pillow, and I look up. And Dean and I look up at the same exact time, and we had the same exact reaction, mind you. I look up, and the door opens, and in comes this like insanely beautiful man. Like, he looked like he was like straight out of GQ. He's got like his little like scrubs on because he was in the OR, and he came in, and he just was like coming in to save the day because he was the anesthesiologist. And when I tell you, he like took his mask off and smiled at me, and I was just like, oh my God. Like, for a moment, I forgot the pain.
And this is pre-COVID time, so it was like acceptable to have a mask off and look at this guy.
It was. And somehow, like, I sat up and I hugged the pillow and I bent over and you put in the epidural and everything was great. But I remember that moment just feeling like so much more relaxed, and like you could still kind of feel like the little like tenseness of the contractions a little bit, but it was nothing worse than like a mild period pain. But then that, I don't know if that like kind of slowed down my progress or if that was just like my body's journey, but they tried to, I remember being like easier, right? Which was great.
Do you happen to remember how far dilated you were when you got the epidural and how much you had progressed?
I want to say 6 or 7 centimeters. I want to say 6. We'll stick with 6.
Okay.
So then they tried to give me at that point, they were like, all right, let's try to give you a little Pitocin, because I was progressing a little bit and on my own. And then they tried to give me Pitocin. And then I don't know exactly what was happening every time they gave me the Pitocin, but all they said pretty much was that the baby was not responding well to it. So little Emmy did not like the Pitocin. She wanted to do things in her own time, in her own way. So that I want to say was probably like 6 p.m., like right around dinner time. And then I slowly just progressed on my own. Like every time they came in to check, it was like a little more. And there was one point, I want to say probably like 10 p.m. that I closed my eyes to try to rest a little bit. And I remember, I'll never forget this feeling of like, I felt like I was on a boat and I just felt like I was just like becoming seasick. And I ended up getting a little nauseous and then I ended up throwing up a couple of times, which was not on my radar for something that was going to happen during labor. And come to find out, it happened to my mom during her labors and she didn't tell me because she didn't want to freak me out. So I remember throwing up, and then I remember White Chicks was on TV and I was able to close my eyes for a little bit. And then when I woke back up, the doctor came in to check and it was about midnight and I was 10 centimeters dilated. And the doctor told me straight up, like, it's going to be time to push very, very soon. So I remember, I think I texted you and I texted a few other friends and my family, just being like, all right, this is it. Like, we should have a baby around, you know, midnight, 1 a.m. They turned the little, I don't know what the term is for it, but like the little cart that the baby goes on with the light, is there a word for that?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know what the official name is, but my dad calls that a dollop station, where they weigh and measure them and there's the light for the heating and everything.
Yeah, like the Apgar tests and everything. So they turned that on and I was just like, oh my God, like it is time. Let's get ready to go. So that happened and I was like, all right, it's about to get real. Let's start pushing. And I remember pushing. And at this point, to be totally honest, I was absolutely exhausted and then pushing was going to start. So I was like, okay, like, let's do this. And they actually had put, I forgot this part. They put, the heart rate monitor in her, head, which I forgot what that's called exactly. So he had that going on. And then I started pushing. And I remember, like, I've heard so many stories about women who like feel the urge to push and they know that it's time to push. And I personally did not really experience that. I knew when I kind of looked up at the screen to know, you know how the screen shows you like when you're contracting and it shows you like kind of the intensity of each one. So I remember using that screen as a guide more than listening to like my body. Cause at that point I did not feel like, oh my God, I need to push. I need to get this baby out. That feeling never really happened looking back on it.
And I think that's really common with an epidural because you can't feel much down there. You might not feel that urge to push that you would feel if you didn't have one.
Yep. Yeah. Which is like, you know, also kind of caused, I think, a little bit of like a disconnect between me and like my natural urge to push. Right. So like I couldn't feel that urge and I was pushing and the doctor was like encouraging and like letting me do my thing. And Dean was holding a leg up. And at one point, like Emmy was down the birth canal enough where the doctor could see her hair. So it was progressing a little bit. Like I was pushing her out. Trying to push her out, I guess we'll say. I'll retract that. And fast forward 2 more hours, I had been pushing for 2 hours. They put the oxygen mask on me. Her heart rate was dipping a tiny bit. I had to shift my body to the side between pushes. And then at the 2.5 hour mark of pushing, I was absolutely exhausted to the point where like, I don't even fully remember this part. And the doctor came in and was like, okay, like, let's do one final, you know, let's try right now. And she was like, but typically we don't let our patients or our moms push for more than 3 hours because it could be exhausting on the body and it could be exhausting on the baby. So we pushed again, and then Dean and I talked, and we decided that we were going to have a C-section for Emmy, which was, you know, 1,000,000% not in my birth plan, right? And 1,000,000% not on my radar. So this whole entire time, I'm thinking like, all right, I'll just have a vaginal birth. And then all of a sudden, the talk of a C-section is put on the table. And I was just like, immediately, my brain was just like, I am doing whatever I can do to, oh, I'm getting emotional. Whatever I can do to get this baby out and to have a healthy baby, because at the end of the day, like, what's more important, like having a healthy baby or like trying for your dream labor, you know?
Yeah, of course.
So, sorry. Well, no, I'm not sorry. I'm not going to apologize for getting emotional, because it was extremely emotional. My cat is just came to my lap to comfort me. So that's the only time that Dean ended up leaving. So Dean had to go to get his scrubs on, and I was prepped for, they were prepping the OR and they were getting me ready. And then they're wheeling me into the operating room and gave me this drink, which was like the most disgusting thing I've ever had in my entire life. And, you know, they tell you not to eat however many hours before you go into labor anyway. So I had like 7 bites of mac and cheese in my stomach, like hours before. And then I got nauseous and then took this drink. So they're wheeling me into the OR. They're getting set up. Dean's on my left side, sitting down next to me. And the gorgeous anesthesiologist walks in, and he is like getting ready to up my pain meds, because they have to give you, you don't just have like a regular epidural and go into surgery. You have to have like the specific numbing to numb you from like shoulders down, pretty much, I think it was. Which is pretty crazy, but that maybe might have to be for a different time. So they're getting me ready, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I'm going to throw up. And this the beautiful anesthesiologist man grabbed a bedpan, and I just turned to my side and threw up the entire drink that they gave me.
Oh my goodness.
Like, never forget that as like the starting point into this C-section experience. So then he has to give me the new like pain meds. So he's administering them through my IV. And then he takes like a little, I don't remember exactly what it was, like a little, I want to say it was a needle, but like not as intense. And he like poked me in certain parts of my body, because they have to make sure that you are numb before they give you the surgery. And I was not as numb as they thought I was going to be. So they administered a little more medicine, and then started the process of the C-section. So I did not have much knowledge of this beforehand, and which was okay. Like, I was kind of like as calm as I could have been going into this. And I was also just exhausted. So I was just laying there like, all right, let's do the best thing for the baby. Let's get this girl out of me. And Dean's sitting there, and I remember just feeling like, you know, the shakes that you get when you're in labor sometimes, like I was just extremely shaky, which was something else that I like kind of wasn't expecting. So I was shaking and like trying to control the shakes, and they're giving me, you know, they're doing the surgery, and they began, and all I felt was like kind of pressure. And I compared it a little bit to, when I got my wisdom teeth out and I was not put under, I was awake, and I just felt this pressure. And that's what I was comparing it to at the time, because I was like trying to calm my mind. I was practicing some yoga breathing. And after what felt like a very long time, I don't know if it was a long time or not, the anesthesiologist yelled, "Delivery!" And the doctor held Emmy up over the little sheet, and I saw her, and she started crying right away. And I obviously knew then that like that was the best decision for our family at the time. And that we had had a healthy baby girl, and it was just, you know, all of like that kind of trauma that came with it was worth it. But because of that, we couldn't do like immediate skin to skin. We couldn't do delayed cord clamping. Dean ended up cutting the cord, which was wonderful. But, you know, they put her on the table, did like the Apgar test and everything. And she was a healthy, incredible baby girl, wig on her head,
like a full head of hair.
had a really thick black hair. And I was not even able to hold her right away because I was still shaking so much. But Dean held her. We snapped like our little picture that we have that the anesthesiologist took that I'll never forget. But then as they were, I don't know what better way to say this, as they were closing me up after surgery, they thought that they had hit my bladder during the incisions. Because during a C-section, like there are a lot of super cool videos that you can watch that are not as graphic, but they kind of show you like all of the layers of skin that they have to get through to get to your uterus and to get the baby out safely. And it's not a little thing. It's pretty major abdominal surgery. So they thought that they had cut my bladder a little bit because I think there was a little bit of blood in my urine. So it took them a little extra time to kind of close me up and then monitor that. So because of that, I had to have the catheter in for an extra 24 hours in the hospital just to make sure that everything was okay. And it ended up being okay, thankfully. So then, we get transferred to the recovery room for, I think, 4 or 5 hours. And then from there, we got transferred to the hospital room, which we would be in for 3 days. So right after the C-section, you have to go to the recovery room for them to, it's like the surgery recovery room. So they have to monitor you, they check your vitals. And from there, I was able to do skin to skin, which I'll always remember, which was absolutely incredible having this little baby finally like out into the world. My OB did not end up delivering Emmy. She was on call like 4 hours after the surgery. So she ended up coming into the recovery room because her hours were finally on, and she came in to check on me and just to make sure everything was okay and to meet Emmy. And I will always remember that as well. So from there, we get transferred to our actual hospital room. And I had a huge room, and they give you the option of having a private room, which you can pay for, which I think was like a couple of years ago. I think it was like $1,500 a night. Or you can have the option of a shared room, which you will likely have a roommate. So I got, one of the few perks of having a C-section is I believe that you have a larger room, and I'm not exactly sure why, but I had a pretty big room, and there was a woman who had given birth a few days before, and she was just being checked out. So as I went in, I had the whole room to myself for a whole entire day, which was great. And then I ended up getting a new roommate the next day, but Dean actually ended up leaving because it was a shared room. There were no beds and there was like a tiny armchair for him to sit in. So he was like, I'm going to go home for the night. He went home, he took care of the cats and then came back the very next day. But in that entire recovery process, he was there. And then my family ended up coming and his dad and stepmom came and his aunt came to visit. And, the recovery from a C-section is something that I think should probably be a follow-up episode, and it could be its own episode or its own two episodes, depending on how far we want to get into it. Cause it was something that I was not at all prepared for. And something that I think if somebody is planning to have a C-section or ends up having an unplanned C-section, like mine was, it could be something that, could be super informative and something that they would want to listen to beforehand. But they did her little hearing test, which she did not pass the first time. And they said, typically C-section babies do not pass the hearing test the first time, because when babies are born vaginally, they are, essentially like squeezed out of the vaginal canal. And during that squeezing out process, the fluid in their ears comes out a little bit more than a C-section baby who was, a little like pulled out of you. So I thought that was fascinating. And then they came back to give her the hearing test the next day and she passed, and the lactation consultant visited, and we started our breastfeeding journey, which could totally be 7 other episodes of this. And we stayed in the hospital for 3 days. And then after the third day, we went home and started our little lives together in our tiny New York City apartment.
Yes, I would love to come back and talk more about postpartum recovery, both a vaginal delivery and a C-section delivery, but I think I never really hear people talking about C-section recovery and what that actually looks like. So I think it's important to talk about it. And also, if you want to breastfeed, what does that look like postpartum if you've had a C-section? So I know from a vaginal perspective, it's difficult. So I can't imagine when you have an incision that you're working around that's a walk in the park either. So I think the other thing that I just wanted to touch on that you mentioned in the very beginning, you said you were talking to your preschoolers how birth is unpredictable. You don't know when a baby's going to come and you don't know how a baby is going to come into this world. And so for you guys, I think this is a really great story, how you kind of talked about you had, I'll just call it a loose birth plan or your birth wishes of what you wanted, but it looked completely different than what you had envisioned for yourself or even what you imagined what your birth might look like. And I think that's a really good reminder that we really can't plan these things. Birth is so unpredictable, and one thing might lead to the next thing, and that's going to look different for every single person. And so sharing these stories and hearing stories can help give an idea of what those might look like for people, even though your story is probably going to sound different.
I do want to note, which I think I just forgot because I was like so into the birth story and got a little bit emotional, is that did I mention that her heart rate was dropping like frequently during my pushing? Toward the tail end of pushing. And that is why, on top of me pushing for so long, they were like, listen, like her heart rate is dropping, like kind of what's the game plan here? And that also really just geared our decision. And she thankfully was delivered. And like you said, we're both healthy. We're both alive, which is something that I do not take for granted because I know dangerous childbirth can be sometimes. And absolutely there was birth trauma, and I still have a little bit of birth trauma thinking about having another baby, right? Like I would be lying through my teeth if I told you that I was not anxious and nervous and scared to have another baby and to birth another baby into this world, because I don't know what a second birth will look like, but that's what I've thought about for a while. And that my doctor actually said that I would be a perfect candidate for a VBAC because my body thinks that I delivered vaginally since I progressed naturally on my own and pushed for so long. Mm-hmm. And because there was no other reason that led us to a C-section. So we will see in months or years to come what that might look like.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's always fun to hear a story from start to finish, from trying to conceive to pregnancy, anatomy scan, to what the labor looked like, to the birth of the baby. I love listening to birth stories and hearing about them. So thank you for sharing this unexpected C-section.
Yeah. For sure. You're very welcome. I love talking about it. And I think that talking about it is extremely therapeutic for me. So anytime I can talk about it or answer questions or anything, I would be more than happy to.
We want to say thank you so much to everyone who tuned into this week's episode of the Love Baby and Toddler podcast. If you would enjoy this episode, we would love it if you wanted to share it with anyone else or leave us a review. And as always, you can find more of us in real time on Instagram and TikTok at Love Baby and Toddler.